Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, hope they start the Giants. Now, tomorrow is Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down another 11 after yesterday's kind of rout. Down on 147, NASDAQ down 35. This has turned into a pretty crummy week. China, after we've been doing, all we've been doing is talking about how much it's been up. Not so last night. Down 4%. We got the Shanghai down 136, which is 4.4%. Hang Seng down 551, 1.9. I got Japan down 2. Evidently, the trade data disappoints yet again. Exports fall more than 20% in February. Overall trade data come in much weaker. So whatever's happening, whatever the slowdown is, whether it's starting here because of other places first, I don't know if it's caused by terrorists, whether it was happening anyway. You never exactly know what causes something. But anyway, I'm sure there'll be all kinds of views on it. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Yeah, what's up? How are you with the things in Indiana? Are you guys all worried about the Chinese stock sell-off?
No.
Yet.
Not yet, and maybe not ever. I'm worried about getting all the midterm grades in and taking spring break.
Well, there you go. So where are you going, down to Florida, to Daytona, like all the kids?
No, actually, I have some appointments, some work-related appointments lined up, but nothing more than one per day next week. So, well, you know, I'll be speaking at some high schools and things like that.
Well, I suppose that's a good thing. I was at a wake last night from a softball buddy, and that's usually not a good thing.
That is not a good thing.
No. Richie Garzato, how Italian is that? So it was all
I think you have to move your hand a little bit while you say that.
Casato. And there was a reasonable crowd, not many of the softball guys, because I went early right from work, and I kind of bumped into the wife, and real nice lady, and interesting people's views, sometimes people's views on sports and what people do and what they don't do, and some people think that it's a waste of people's time, some people think it's obviously not, and I talked to his wife, and I went a long time, and she goes, "Oh, you're from memory from softball, blah blah blah." Nicely come out, you know, usual. And she goes, "I tell you what, Richie loves softball so much. He liked the people, and I couldn't argue with him. I liked the people too." He said, "But he was a guy that always wore a smile, but when he had a softball game, the smile was just a little bigger. I mean, he just whatever frustrations he might have had, and everybody has them. He never took them out on anybody else except the white ball." And
yeah, you know what? I always felt the same way. That was like my happy place. You know,
yeah.
Whatever else was going on, if I was playing ball, then nothing else mattered. Always the other thing, which was not necessarily good, was I can be pretty tactful for the most part, but when I'm on the field, if it comes into my head, it's pretty much going to come out of my mouth.
Well, it's I remember we used to. I had a guy from Pullman. He was, at the time, he was older than me, which, role reversal. But he was probably in his 40s, and I was in my 20s, and I worked for Pullman, and we used to play handball 2 days a week, and at 6:30, because he wanted to get out of the house, had the wife and the two daughters, and he said, I can only take it 3 days a week. The one has nothing to wear, the other one wore what the other one was going to wear, and the wife gets in the middle of the fight, and he goes, I can handle it 3 days a week. I just got to get out of here and get a game. Okay. And so we come across this other older guy in his 40s, which would not be older for us now, right, Kevin?
Yeah, or as we call them now, kids.
Yeah. Well, this guy liked to play, so we picked up one night a week, too. So we played twice in the morning and once during the week. at night. And this guy, talk about a big, powerful guy, Kevin, but he was a little older, and he had, you know, I could kill him in singles because, you know, I was 25. And, but he was, and I tell you what, in cutthroat, he was danger because he hit the ball so damn hard. I mean, I never played with anybody who hit the ball that hard. See, I mean, guy was like built like a brick bleep house. And, so one night, Larry, the other older guy who was really kind of this guy's friend, can't make it. You know, so this is long before cell phones, so he goes, I don't even know, you know, Bill's number. See if you can find him, tell him, you know, I can't make it. So I call up, and this is, you know, back when you called somebody's house. I knew he'd lived with his mother or his mother-in-law or somebody, you know, with his family. They had, like, you know, extended living. And, well, the mother-in-law or the mother answers the phone. And I go, oh, would you tell Bob, you know, that Larry can't make it tonight and, you know, we got a game and, you know, we probably won't play. All of a sudden I get the south side, smatter you. well, nothing. What, you got a broken leg? What's the matter with you? You don't want to play him? I don't know. I'll be happy to play him. Fine, he'll be there. She goes, if he doesn't have a game, he's grumpy. Okay. Okay. I think sports is a serious outlet. And I know my mom, who I don't think would have been a terrific athlete, always said that she was very jealous because in those days women didn't have the same sort of stuff. And I'm sure she'd be very happy now that ladies, rightfully so, can get games and everything. I mean, they played bridge, they bowled. I mean, she did some stuff. She played poker, bridge, bowled, I mean, everything you could do. She actually did yoga back before yoga was. But still, she said the idea that the guys, it's always a part of the guys' culture, not the women. She said,
oh. I am trying to envision your mother doing yoga.
I know she had the yoga thing in the back of the trunk, and off she went. You know. I don't know. Well, she never got heavy. I mean, just when she was older, she was never.
No. I'm not saying that. I just knowing her personality, it just doesn't seem like a match off the top of my head.
Whatever she was, whatever was going on, whatever
probably
was
mellowed
thing,
her out.
Yeah, whatever the thing was, she did it. You know, she was taking classes. St. Xavier's has classes like you guys do for the older people at night. Still does. They always have. St. Xavier's a pretty big time university now, but. They always had that. She always took a class, history or, I mean, she wasn't big on languages like me, but, I mean, I think, did you guys get a lot of older people taking classes?
I don't. On occasion, I will get someone, you know, I don't see anybody really in the 50s and 60s. Most of what I get in the evening are just, they're full-time working people who want to get a degree, whether they're, you know, and they may be starting into a four-year degree. You know, in their 30s, or they may just be working on certifications, you know, industry certifications.
So you don't really have a specific adult night program, you know, type of thing for.
Correct.
All right,
correct.
Well,
we do not.
Well, it's regarding this, well, switching back over to this China situation, Kevin. I have a particular. If there's a bone to pick. With both this administration and other ones and the other economists, I think that with the tariff situation and we're starting these kind of these wars we're having during them, and maybe they were rightfully so. I'm going to say, Kevin, the difference between my view and theirs is I think the world economy was a little too fragile to do this. Doesn't mean they won't get away with it. But I think if you have the same view I do, that the 2008 fiasco has not been fixed, it's been covered over by really more debt, like twice as much debt as we had in 2008. If you ask everybody what caused it, they'll say too much debt, right? I mean, damn near everybody. So right now we're, quote, fixed. We fixed it with more debt. To try and tip that canoe a little bit, I think shows a lack of knowledge of the situation, in my opinion, which isn't to say that I'm right and Larry Kudlow and all these guys are always wrong and blah, blah, blah. The simple fact is I think they are wrong. I think China's economy, that they obviously depend on, and so do we, even though we don't like them all very much, is a little too tender, and it's too bigger to be messing with the way we are, and I think that if this concept that seems to work politically for at least for somebody's base, that if we screw China, what was the line in the Hunt for Red October? One Russian guy, you arrogant ass, you've killed us. You know, I worry about that more than you hear generally on any of the financial talk shows. Now, I don't know if that makes me an idiot or just more observant or what? But what's your opinion? Or you or Manny? I think they're too. If they go racketing down, I don't think they go without us, at least to a certain extent.
Yes, we are definitely too interconnected to not hurt each other. You know, and that's probably why, in the end, whatever deal they strike might fix a couple of things of substance, but for the most part, it's going to seem like trimming around the edges, because we probably can't do much more than that, and probably shouldn't do much more than that.
And I honestly...
I don't know. I guess, you know, I have a wait and see, because I don't have any influence over it, so... You know, I just watch, and thank God I'm old and don't have to live with it very long if it goes south.
Well, you do have kids.
Yeah, well, screw them.
let them find their own way.
You know, I've given them all I can at this point. They're on their own.
You get this kind of judgment, Kevin, and you don't really like it the first couple times you've seen it. This kind of came to me when I was on the board, and I was, of course, of the Seabo.
Yeah, by the way, my son's a listener, so I'm sure he's going to love that line.
Yeah, you know, you get this idea that you fight every battle when you're young, right? You know, and you get on the board, and you find out that there's been somebody. Maybe it's a firm. Not that firms would ever have problems, right? Big firms like to push the envelope, and you find out sometimes that somebody's doing something that's dastardly. And you pretty much have to, you got to deal with it. I mean, one way or the other. I mean, it's kind of your job. Or sometimes you find out that people pull some crap in the past that's pretty appalling. But the market has sort of fixed itself, where people have learned not to, for lack of a better term, fall for that crap anymore, type of thing. And it sort of has fixed itself, and you find out about it, and maybe it ended, you know, 2-3 years ago. I don't know. Then there's a judgment call. Do we turn the place upside down for something that isn't happening anymore? And make, you know, victims. Now, of course, one of the guys from the firm is probably sitting on the board with you, which always makes it more difficult. So you wonder if your judgment is, messed with, for lack of a better term, when you're doing this. Do I really want to, you know, embarrass, Matty Weber was sitting on the board with me because he's the Merrill Lynch guy, and it turns out, not using any names because I don't know, Merrill Lynch was the biggest crook or something. How much do we really expect to extract from these guys from stuff that happened 10 years ago? That's been my judgment concern with this all the way. The debt part and this part. I mean, going forward, I think if you're gonna stop Boeing from giving China the plans to the 737 or the 787, I think that needs to be a crime here. Not a crime in China can't ask. I don't see how you police that. So my point is, if in fact they did get stuff 10, 15 years ago, 5 years ago, that we know they probably shouldn't have, and they were idiots for doing it, or idiots for asking and us for giving, I don't know how you get that back, and I don't know how big of an issue you can really make out of it. And going forward, what are we going to do tomorrow? I read some stuff that said last year they actually got more intellectual rights than they have any other year while this is going on. So, I mean, I think we need to figure out what do we want going forward. Let's leave the past behind. Let's not worry about them admitting to the past. Let's just figure out, today's Friday, starting Monday, what do we want to do and get this done with? I don't think we know. That's been my when I say we, the collective we bargaining. I don't think we know. Most of the stuff, you know, I'm going to go Trump here for a second. Most of the stuff that Trump has ripped a hole in or poked a hole in, I am right with him on poking a hole in everything. But you're not going to get me to argue that after how many years, 35 years, 30 years, that the SALT agreement doesn't need to be looked at again. Nobody would argue against that. But to totally rip something up, say the thing is totally messed up, throw people at it, and that without knowing where you want to come out, and then one day declare victory and thump your chest when it don't even look like there's any changes or very few, I don't know what that gets you. Maybe it gets you some votes. In other words, I don't know where we're going with this, Kevin, and I think it's starting to cause a problem.
You know, I don't know that, that as some of that stuff gets blown up and reopened for negotiations, that there isn't some, some basic. I mean, if you go back and read, you know, Trump lays out, you know, the negotiation process, and I actually don't think it's all that revolutionary. I think there's a lot of people that would tell you the same thing in negotiation. You know what your walkaway is, you know what you'll want to get, and you know what you'll accept. And I am pretty sure that he and, you know, vicariously his team are going to go through that process. And so, you know, has he articulated that publicly? In most cases, no.
Okay, well, but like I said, I think this
one
guy,
of the things that's different about his approach is that he will walk away from the table, as we saw a week ago, and as we've seen in other negotiations, and that's, you know, that gives you a more powerful negotiating position.
Well, okay, except that if he walks away from a real estate deal, you and I don't care. If he blows China up, at least even to a small extent, and walks away from whatever that deal is, you and I are affected. So
the real concern isn't does he know what he wants or not know what he wants. The question is his walk away something that would do too much damage?
Well, and will he listen
and
to?
That's the concern I think you're really expressing. Yeah, not whether he, you know, not like you said, what he knows, whether he knows, you know, what the objective is.
Well, usually, Kevin, from what I've read, the people that go on these trade things are usually our best and brightest, because it's really tough to do. And I heard the one guy talk, we're never going to pronounce his name, Lighthizer or whatever, in front of Congress last week, and nothing that guy said.
I've been working real hard at not being able to pronounce that all week, by the way.
I know. I should probably just put it in front of me. I never know. Every day I don't think I'm going to bring the guy's name up, but there's nothing that he said that dissuaded me from that opinion. I mean, he seemed to me like, okay, he's our guy. Right? I mean, he seemed like he knew his stuff. Now, the question is, at the end of the day, are they going to listen to him? Or is the job too big for even him? Those are things, I don't know.
Yeah, I can't offer an opinion on that either, because I don't know either.
But the element, I don't know that that entering the, let's put it this way, it wouldn't be my style, and I don't think it would be yours, that is my style would be, we have some problems with NAFTA. Things have changed. By the way, you know, the people in Mexico and these plants that moved down there aren't making any more money than they are before. So we've got a problem with it because we anticipated by this time that they would be and that you would be more of a customer than you currently are. So in our minds, something's wrong. So we would like to talk about all that. But that's not the way we open these things now. There's this constant, there's the accusations flying back. We're being screwed. The guys who,
oh yeah, yeah, it goes nuclear.
And I don't know that that's, and so I mean, the thing with China is probably what, 2-3 times the size of the thing with Canada in terms of,
yeah, it could be.
And
I won't argue with you there. That's not my negotiating style. Is I don't open with throwing a nuclear bomb. But I do know what I won't do and what my walk away is. I've done enough contracts to, to have a pretty good comfort level with that.
Plus, I think the idea that Mexico and Canada were more pushed to make a deal when they're sitting right here on our border, I don't know that China can't, to the extent that they will let their economy kind of go down the rat hole. What if this takes another year? I mean, wow. And the other thing that bothers me, not that anybody cares, is that because we have this budget deficit now that is becoming totally out of control, in my opinion, and I'll dig up the numbers on break, but I'm going to say $120 billion, $130 more than last year already. This is with $55 billion in tariffs. I don't know if these guys, I mean, I don't, I guess I wish I knew the number, Kevin.
If only somebody had predicted that when the tax bill was passed.
Yeah. That's why I was, I know you weren't on the other day, and I was kind of ranting with, actually going back and forth with Hal a little bit, that in this, the current economic climate we're in, the left is exactly spewing the same BS the right is spewing. We're cutting taxes, don't worry, it's going to do so much for growth, the growth's going to be 4%, we'll end up with more taxes than we ever had before, even though we cut them. Okay, if you believe that, I got a bridge for you. Then the left. Well, we're gonna just print money. We're gonna throw it at education. Not something specific like the GI Bill or something, but just throw it at education. raises here, raises there. Now, you might like that idea because you're a teacher now. And when our increase in human capital is going to increase the economy so much that you won't have to worry about the money we spend taxes, it'll be a pimple on the ass of an elephant. Both of those stories are absolutely bonk. Neither one of those work. One's kind of a trickle down somehow. One's kind of a God knows what. They both are, give me my money now. Trust me, it'll help the rest of you guys later, but I want mine now. I mean, both of them are exact same arguments, just different people. Or am I wrong?
Oh, I think it makes it a lot of fun watching everybody argue so passionately about about being idiots.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at we're in this, I don't know, Kevin, I was just reading the other night. The reason why I was reading it is because it aggravated the hell out of me. We're talking another, I know I'm shifting around, but to me it's all the same subject. We're shifting around on the burn interchange. It's going to be another 3 or 3.5 years. So it's going to be a 10-year project, and it'll be like,
I think it's up to $713
million. Yeah. You know how long it took from start to finish to build a railroad from Council Bluffs, Iowa, to Sacramento with how many tunnels and everything else? Pick a number.
Higher.
Pick a number.
8 months.
4 years.
Okay. I don't know.
The redo of the burn interchange is going to take twice as long as building the Transcontinental Railroad.
Is part of that, just to be reasonably fair, is part of that because we're trying to do it while keeping the Chicago traffic load?
Yes.
Moving through it?
Yes, but that doesn't begin to... The enormity doesn't begin. I mean, the Hoover Dam was 3.5 years. Golden Gate Bridge was 3 years. I mean, we're not even on the same plan.
They could still keep things open like they have been and get this done faster if they just would work on it 24 hours a day.
They don't work
but
with
they
us.
Refused
well,
to
that,
do that.
That's true, and I remember when they used to do that on Chicago expressways.
Yeah, for whatever reason now they refuse to do that. And
well, they don't work when it's cold. They don't work when it's raining. I mean, it's you go by there, Kevin. Have you ever seen more than 30 guys working, Manny?
I don't know. Maybe not. But and I don't, you know, I don't begrudge them for, you know, not working during the polar vortex or something
yeah,
like that.
Sure.
Obviously, but for, I mean, the fact that, you know, it's a major sort of artery into the city. It's kind of the only one where everything kind of comes together. The fact that you wouldn't make that a priority and work 24 hours a day in shifts. And have extra guys when the weather's good, and then maybe dial it down when the weather's bad, that's fine. But, my God, you can't just, I mean, like, yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen more than 30 people working.
But if you drive by there, is there any sense of urgency that hits you?
I've never seen a sense of urgency from anyone working.
Yeah, I mean, it's, anyway, SP Futures down 1175.
And that's infuriating.
Yeah. Dow Futures down 114. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber, and aboard Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Strange morning here. We got the market down at 1250. This is after yesterday's pretty serious sell-off. This all started Monday morning. We came in like very hot, very, very hot. S&Ps were up 20-something on the show. Mid-morning turned to being down 35 and really haven't sort of looked back yet. We've been down 4 days in a row. S&P futures down 12 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures down 40. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 78.7%. FTSE down 64.9. CAC around down 22.4. They're the only ones that are sort of hanging in there. Asia, here's where the big problem is. Nikkei down 430, that's 2%, still over 21,000 though. Again, these guys have been up. But now Shanghai down 136, that's 4.4%, 2969. So they were over 3,100, and now we've seen them 2,500, so they still have had this big rally, but they start pulling off 4% a day, you run out of rallies pretty quick. Hang Seng down 551, 2%. This was caused by a Chinese export report where the exports fell more than 20% in February. 20% is a big number for an export economy, which they are. We've got oil down 98 cents, 55.68. Brent down 123, 65.07. So now that spread has come back 60 cents like in about 4 days. It was $10, I believe, on Monday. Now it's like 9:30. Natural gas, 281. RBOB down 3 cents finally. 176 has been up like freaking every day. Gold up 710 as gold's bouncing back with this
bleaker economic outlook here to take it on the market. Silver up 7 cents. We get a little bit of a bounce there, which is good for my stuff. We have the numbers today coming out, the employment numbers, which are expected to be, this is according to MarketWatch, economic calendar. Last month we had a 304, which is a big outlier number, with a 4% unemployment. This month, 175 is predicted, with unemployment rate going back to 3.8. And after Traffic Weather Sports, I'll explain how the numbers and the household survey did not match these numbers at all last month, and I will probably look for a pullback of some of it. Maddie, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports? This is way too complicated this morning. All 30, yours.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, although there is a light dusting of snow flurries coming down that could create some slick spots. But no issues on the Edens. Kennedy traffic building out near O'Hare, but no accidents or issues to report. Eisenhower and Stevenson, normal traffic volumes for this hour. Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, everything on the south side is actually looking really good. Only accidents of note, northwestern suburbs, right off of the Jane Addams Tollway at Roselle Road northbound, there is an accident that's just about to be towed and cleared, but that's causing a bit of a slowdown out there. And then just to the southwest of there, Stearns Road at Route 59 in Bartlett, there is a crash. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, some flurries early, not expecting much for accumulation, but a little bit of snowfall. And then we actually warm up a little bit. We'll reach a cloudy high of 35 degrees. Right now it's overcast and 27. For Phoenix, partly cloudy skies with a high of 66 today. Right now it's overcast and 61. In sports, Blackhawks' very slim playoff chances hang on by a thread as they came back and beat Buffalo. They had a lead early, blew the lead, and then won in a shootout 5-4 over the Sabres. Blackhawks are 9 points back with 15 games to play. So again, very small chance, but if you get really hot here and win, say, 12 out of 15, then maybe you got a shot. Coyotes have a much better shot, although they're still on the outside looking in. They shut out the Flames last night 2-0. The Coyotes are 3 points back of the last playoff spot. Lastly, college hoops. Illinois season is winding down. They were blown out at home last night by Indiana, 92-74. Chief.
Kevin, bear with me for a little bit, because this is usually Carl's territory, but I remember, Carl was on, and those that listen every day knew he was a little bit perplexed by the numbers last month, which showed this massive increase in people, 304,000 in the establishment survey. But look at the very strange numbers. I'm looking at the A1, this is the one sheet of paper, and all I can understand, household data historical employment status of the civilian non-institutional population 16 years and over, 1984 to date. And somewhere buried here I have all the way back to 1948. The January numbers, get a load of this. Starting from the population number, these are people in the workforce, somehow we lost 650,000 people in the population between December and January.
So where did they put them?
Yeah, it's a good question. So where the hell they go? So the numbers kind of, the questions sort of flow.
Isn't that, though, the adjustment that, the population growth is an estimate and then it gets adjusted annually?
Footnote number one, this is for you, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. The population figures are not adjusted for seasonal variation.
I didn't say seasonal variation. I said for factual variation.
Now, where do they go? We have people coming over here for Christmas?
Well, in other words, if you're taking the population growth and say you're, you're adding an estimated number, and then the Census Bureau gives you an adjusted number every year, and then you say, well, we overestimated a little bit, or well, we underestimated a little bit, and that's
If you go back all last year,
and I don't know that that's true, by the way. That we'll let Carl explain.
Well, here, I'll help you make your argument. I know you need help with this. If you go back through last year, virtually every month goes up 150,000 to 200,000 people that are now here. I guess these are either people that have reached their 16th birthday, people that have emigrated. I don't know, beamed in by SPAC. I don't know, but then all of a sudden you got a 600,000 drop in January. So maybe there is something like that, Kevin. I'm saying if you start with that column, the rest of them become even more skewed. So you've got actually 11,000 people less in the able-to-be-employed population, which is now 0.1% higher of the labor participation than normally. So the actual number of people employed went from $156,945,000 down to $156,694,000. So the amount of people employed in the household survey actually went down 300,000, not up to 300,000 the establishment survey gives you. Now these are adjusted. So that brings your unemployment rate actually up. But here's another one that's weird. We seem to have gotten almost 650,000 people out of like the X column. I'm talking the people that are available for work that aren't. The other column that's, I mean, I think numerically.
Well, you have to adjust population. Some of them are going to be, yeah, you're going to adjust, yeah, some people who, were in the, in the civilian labor force, and you're going to adjust people who are opting out of working. You should hit all categories.
Well, and we've made them all disappear. That's our solution.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
That's right. So anyway, so the numbers today, I'm saying if you see some that don't make sense, or maybe seem like they don't make sense, it's because the ones last month maybe didn't make sense, and Carl will make sense out of them next week when we have Matt. How's that for a conclusion?
How is that for? And you know, and the thing is, I'm pretty sure that somebody has said on this show at one point or another that statistics lead you to your next question, not to answer.
Yes, absolutely, especially when you look at these these big number, yeah, tables. And
so, yeah, I actually spend some time on labor figures in stats class.
But I will go
for that reason.
I will go, Kevin, of whether we are from the right, left, middle, from the top, from the bottom, if somehow somebody, I'm not going to say that it's a direct line from the president on down, but if somebody gets in governmental power, that somehow through either getting rid of stupid tax laws, you know, getting rid of some things that maybe, in my opinion, that harm small business and excessively favor the bigger ones, where you have combinations of business, in my opinion again, where you lose people working rather than startups where you gain people. If you can somehow fix or at least massage all that, Kevin, and you were to get even as little as $5 to $6 million people out of this not working column back to work, I think all your deficits at every level, state, local, and federal, if you could do 10, I'm sure of it, all of a sudden all that becomes a lot more easy to handle. And I think you'll find that the world is a lot better place. Because if that number was 85 million instead of 95 million. I
don't know the numbers, and this would be a good thing for Carl's commentary. So, you know, because he dives into this. But we are seeing price of labor bid up a little bit lately. Now, I know we're not seeing it on any grand scale at this point. But I'm observing it anyway, and yet there's pressures the other way too, because I think the economy's slowing some, and so you know, hours are an issue, the number of hours, and as we've seen with Amazon when they did go ahead and especially at Whole Foods, go ahead and raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour, then as it turns out they are paying more per hour and people are working fewer hours. So, you know, it's a funny mix of things like that, but great labor is hard to find now. You know, crappy labor is a little bit easier to find. And so the price of great labor is being bid, and I'm seeing it.
I think the phenomenon here, Kevin, and I don't know economically, it's been a while since I've been in school, obviously. I'm going to have to ask Mr. Snar, Professor Snar. There used to be, when you had tests, I remember with Milton Friedman, because he was always such a pain in the ass because of it, you couldn't just tell him, you had to answer every question in two ways. It was called a stock and flow analysis. One is like starting from today, and one, where do we start from, kind of a thing. It was a static analysis and an ongoing analysis. And I don't know if you listened to any of the Jay Powell. You're supposed to be teaching people during the day, so it's my job to listen to this crap. Listen to Jay Powell, and everything that Jay Powell was talking about, which to a certain extent is all he can control, is the things that are starting essentially on his watch. You know, this happened. You know, well, it was the same thing for me. But if you bring me your account today, I really can only answer from this day forward. And if somebody, you know, put you in a stock 10 years ago to went from 100 to zero, there's only so much I can do about that, and that much is zero, right? So, but several of the senators and several of the representatives, as Powell was talking about, just what you just said, we're starting to see a little bit of movement in labor. Virtually, I'm going to say 10 people, two or three of the ladies there are more guys than ladies, but the women pretty much all mentioned it. Said, well, we're not going to catch up at that rate. There's this idea, and this is what I'm always, this is the root cause of my serious bitch about inflation. And if anybody's listening, all the talking I do about it comes down to one thing. Kevin, if you have something that, say for instance, Nehru jackets are 5% of the inflation thing, and all of a sudden, but everybody has to have one. You know, it's not like, suppose it's automobiles or whatever, or gas, natural gas, and everybody has to have it. All of a sudden, one year, that quadruples, while it's still 5% of the basket, right? So now the next year, even if you did the adjustment properly, and it's now 20% of the basket, okay, and then in the next 3 years, say there's no increase in natural gas prices, the way the statistics are taken, you are still bleeped, right? Because the big increase came when it was only 5% of the calculation, and now that it's 20% of the calculation, you've had no increases, even though over the four-year period, you're still quadrupled. So not only do you never catch up, it's a drag on the index, because since it's now at its correct weighting, it's a zero. And so you never pick up the real number. So what people are sensing, even congressmen have a sense, or congresswomen,
I never thought I'd hear anybody say sense and congressmen in the same... But keep going.
I'm saying that what they're sensing, not that they have sense, there's a difference, I'm using it as a verb, I have it here because I just went through it. People that have looked at the last 10 or 15 years of inflation, and they've looked at your income of the average worker, the median worker is up, call it 25%. Yet the price of medical stuff is up like 800%. The education is 1,000%. In other words, you're correct. That there has been a movement from $10 an hour 2-3 years ago to now you can't get anybody for 10, you're paying 11, you're paying 12 in a restaurant, maybe you're paying 15 at you know, Costco or something. But the point, Kevin, is to keep those people even, that number needs to be like 22, and we're showing no thought. So right now, yes, they're keeping up with this year, which is what Jay Powell's saying, and actually maybe are gaining a little bit on this year's inflation. But we're not even close to where we were 10 years ago. We still can't afford the roof, and we're not about to. You know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. And you know what? Here's the thing is, it's so calculable. It could be done, you know, because all you have to do is say, okay, if I take this year's market basket mix and go back and retroactively apply it to the prior years, now where am I? And they have these really cool things called computers and databases that do that nowadays. I don't know if you've heard of them or if anybody in the world of politics and economics has heard of them. But you know, if only someone would tell them about that, they could probably do those calculations for you and then have a real grip on it.
I'm going to dig this piece of paper out by the time you're on next Wednesday, and I'll just read the top five or six lines. And you don't need a computer to say we're bleeped.
Oh, I know, but you could have hard data on this. You know, you could be having this conversation informed rather than with somebody speculating or somebody just clueless about it.
Well, I mean, and these are weaknesses in the data, and every once in a while you'll get a sense of something. Even like I said, even the congressman said, "Well, our people are so far behind. The fact that we're even this year." We're still not getting anywhere. I mean, it's better than chasing this year as well, yes, but it's not, you know what I'm saying? It's like a guy who's been out of work for 3 years, and then he gets a 10% raise on his old salary. God, he better live a long time to make up for those 3 years.
Yeah. Now, I know for a fact that there are people who have been retroactively applying corrective data to different
what? You and I could create that formula pretty easily.
Yeah, it's not hard. It's not hard. Well, you just take the formula and never mind. I'm not even going to start into it because next thing you know, we'll have a whole database designed.
Well, I mean, if you look at the consumer price index, let's be real simple about it. Okay, there's all these items that have been on it for God knows how many years. And I'll take something real simple. Some city, I won't say Chicago, and I'll exaggerate here a little bit, decides it's $500 to park in front of your own friggin' house. Okay. Now that's not in the tables anywhere. And all of a sudden you got this $500 expense you didn't have before. Now if you wanted to count it, which they probably don't, where the hell would you put it? What are you bringing in as? Is it an addition? Does it take away from something else? And oh, by the way, what if it stays $500 for the next 5 years? How do you handle it? What's the increase?
Right. So what do you do?
Yeah.
You say, well, $500. If somebody makes $50,000, that's what, 1%?
Yep.
So it's 1% of your basket. And so you go back in time and you add it to the basket as 1% of the basket at a price of zero.
So, but
and now you have it as at a price of 500, and now you can see that spike up.
Okay, but at 100%
in the basket.
But at 100% increase, it's not even. But now the weird part is, Kevin, the flip coin of this. This is where I think it gets even worse. It's just like a prescription drug for an old person. It goes from $10 to $100. He's got $90 less to spend on other stuff. So if you know economics, I think the way I think I know it, you're actually degrading from the other stuff. So if you don't count the prescription drug thing properly, your inflation on the other stuff is going to be less because you got less money to spend.
Yeah, so maybe the basket doesn't need to go, sum to $100, 100%.
Right.
Maybe the retro basket's going to go to 150 or 180.
Yeah, very well. So I mean, it's not like these guys aren't trying. I think they are trying. I think it's a very difficult task. But I also think at the end of the day, you got to sit there and go, wait a minute. that prescription drug was $5 at Walmart 8 years ago, and now it's 200. That's not in any schedule anywhere. And the fact that maybe insurance might pay for it, which is what some people will tell you, that doesn't matter. It just means everybody's insurance goes up. It's like silly putty. It's going to come out someplace, right?
Yep.
By the way, we have to talk basketball tournaments this weekend. This is like kind of the duller year, and I'm not watching like you guys do. I don't see these small conferences having like a Loyola or a Yale that's in no matter what, and if they lose a tournament, that means two people in and somebody else out. Doesn't seem to be much.
Not a lot of that. It's a weird year. This is the a lot of a fair number of outstanding teams, and a fair number of bad teams, and not much in the middle.
Yeah, there's probably three schools that are in play for that scenario that Chief is talking about. Wofford out of the SoCon Conference. Well, I think it's the Southern Conference.
That's the one that Jay-Z always likes to give the score of. She must have a boyfriend, though.
Oh, really? Yeah, they're very good, and 26-4, and they're pretty highly rated in like the net rankings and KenPom and stuff like that. If they were to get upset in their conference tournament, there's a chance that they could get in. Buffalo out of the MAC is very good, and it's been in the top 25 all year. They're probably going to get in if they get upset. I don't think they're going to get upset, but if they were to get upset in the MAC, they could probably get in. And then Nevada, the team that went to the Elite Eight last year and then lost to Loyola, they were one game away from the Final Four, and they brought pretty much everyone back. They're out of the Mountain West Conference, and if they were to get upset, they could probably still get in. So there are three teams that are still in that scenario. But
so Wichita State, no.
No Wichita State.
Butler, no.
No St. Mary's. Butler's in the Big East now, so they're considered a bigger conference.
Okay, but they're not good enough for if they don't win a conference tournament.
That is slipping away from the Big East a little bit, though. They were always considered an equal of the other major conferences, and I think that's getting away from them a little.
Why do you say that? I mean, why do you think
haven't gotten into Atlantic 10 land yet, but they seem to be getting that. And I think that's just fine, actually. I like the Big East a lot. I miss the Big East a lot and wish the Irish were still in it.
Why do you think they're slipping?
Well, they're not slipping in the national title sense because Villanova keeps winning it every year.
Yeah,
because Villanova is a real contender. The reason I think they're slipping is because most of their schools don't have the same kind of budgets that the schools with football programs have.
Well, I think,
and eventually that takes its toll.
Do you think at some point, and I'm not going to give it maybe the opportunity to slam our alma mater, somebody was giving me some story about the new basketball practice facility and how it's like on a par for what the Nike guy did to Oregon, wherever the hell he's at out there, Oregon. You think we're going a little overboard on this, Kevin? I mean,
I think college basketball is going a little overboard. Is Notre Dame? I've been in the Notre Dame basketball practice facility. It's nice. It's very nice, but it's not lavish.
If you go online
and look up Texas facilities on their athletic site. That's lavish. Go look at Louisville. That's lavish. So it's nothing like those. It's big. But the reason, the reason is because it originally was a student rec center that got rebuilt over when they did as part of the stadium expansion. So they just converted they didn't build from scratch. They gutted it and converted the student rec center into the basketball practice facility.
So where are the students supposed to go now?
And therefore, there's a lot of square footage. But that's not the only determining factor of whether it's lavish.
Is that the place we went out? We worked out in our. It looks like the East Bank Club that we worked out in our reunion.
Probably. What do you mean we?
Me and you.
Yeah,
bro,
probably.
And,
yeah,
you got a mouse in your pocket.
You were.
Me and you. Me and the old guys our age, as opposed to the old guys 2 years younger than us.
Yeah, that's right. Darn right.
Yeah. So this weekend, so the tournaments are just. They're going to be the tournaments. They're not as.
They aren't even starting until next week. Some of the small conference tournaments are starting this weekend, but the major conferences, it's women's tournament time first.
So there's no chance that the Irish come out of the ACC. I say no. Although
five games, they're going to win five games in a row. They haven't won five ACC games all year, but they're going to go buzz bomb the conference in the tournament.
Well,
sure thing.
They could find their ass with both hands and actually sink a couple of threes. They're 1 for 15.
That would be nice.
Why do they keep trying them?
Because at this point, why not? You know, they have these freshmen who are allegedly good shooters. I mean, Nate Leshefsky is an example. He's been a terrible shooter for the most part. A few really good games. That guy played in one of the high school all-star games last year and won the 3-point shooting contest. His reputation as a high school player was a shooter. And he just can't make a shot. That should change over time.
Your buddy and my buddy, your buddy probably more because you actually know him, I like him, the fans, he was there the one game of Alfonso Ellis. The Irish were like 3 for 17 against Miami or somebody, and Miami was like 1 for 15, and he comes back after one of the breaks, he goes, why don't both of these coaches tell these kids to stop shooting threes? What's the matter with them?
But they didn't. Part of Notre Dame's problem is they really don't have a post scorer. You know, John Mooney's a pretty tough big man, but he's not a post up player. So it's really hard. You know, the best you can do is if you feed him, he might get off a jump shot over another big man. But the percentage isn't that high.
No.
So you know, now when you start playing stats, you're playing expected value and. You probably get a better expected value out of threes if you make them at some kind of normal rate.
Yeah.
If you miss them all, your expected value is very low.
Well, Kevin, have a nice weekend, bud. We'll talk to you next Wednesday. SP Futures now down 13.50. We're still leaking. NASDAQ Futures down 43. When we come back, Mr. Helsnar is going to explain all about new monetary theory, old monetary theory, and maybe the right monetary theory. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hollis, Mr. Matt Weber. I'm sitting here reading all this stuff this morning. Not much good news. S&P futures down 1275. NASDAQ futures down 41. Down 124 after yesterday's kind of a horrible day. Shanghai stocks down 4% this morning. China's admitted to a 20% drop in exports in February. China's trade recession has started to emerge is the headline. So there you go. We got the February jobs report coming today. And it's a good thing we have a serious PhD economist sort of dude going to explain this all to us, Professor Harris. Now, Hal, where would you like to start to explain the entire world in 30 minutes?
I don't know. That's a pretty big open question. That might take more than 30 minutes.
You know what? I have a couple areas that I'd sort of like to explore with you because, you know, you're a guy that likes to look at the bigger numbers. And sort of, I mean, we were just, you know, Kevin and I were discussing back and forth about how it's very difficult to get into the numbers, but the quality of the numbers at various times, because I've been talking all week about monetary policy and how if you throw money at an economy that's not necessarily growing anyway because it has problems, you don't get anywhere. Or there have been times like after the Civil War where you're actually pulling money out of the system, which you would think would be creating a recession, and yet because the economy had so many new inventions and so forth, and was so vibrant anyway, it almost didn't matter. And people look at the policies like almost they're in a vacuum, and now you really can't do that. And I was just two areas I want to go. One is, you know, potential infrastructure stuff, and the other is the quote new monetary theory that's brought upon by the extreme left, which to me seems to be the same amount of BS as the extreme monetary theory of the extreme right. Just print money and throw it at our friends and tell everybody else how it's going to benefit them. Go ahead.
Well, if you look at what's going on in China, I mean, China is the mother of all modern monetary theory. I mean, it's that the GDP ratio, according to Goldman Sachs, is about 300%, and 24% of its loans are bad. So when the Chinese were trying to peg their currency to the dollar, and when we were inflating, well, they were inflating. And, you know, holding interest rates low, easy credit. You know, maybe China escaped the 2008 financial crisis mostly unscathed, but I think their chickens are coming home to roost. And this number that you talked about, how they're exporting less, I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think China's going to be rebooting here pretty soon, because it's got a lot of malinvestment that's got to wash itself out.
Yeah, how do you get your hit? I mean, obviously the numbers here. We have Caroline, we have UN, we try and get everybody here to make sense of our numbers, because we think, and you're one of the major proponents, that our guys pretty much hacked the numbers, especially the inflation numbers, but leave that as it may. We've talked about that enough. But even so, I think there's people here that can sort of poke holes in them enough that if you listen and read, you can sort of get there from here. But how in the God's name, I'm just going to zero in on the money numbers now. I mean, and our central bank here, in my opinion, again, I'm not putting words in your mouth, is being very ignorant by driving the loans out of the traditional banking system through the regulation, because then you end up with a shadow banking system that you can't control. You don't even know what's going on. Now, the Chinese, and this, I'm leading the question, this is all the same question, they have a central bank, but they've also encouraged loans outside the country in dollars and euros and in pound that they can't really control. They also have provincial banks, right? And they also have, I'll call them payday loan places on steroids. So how the hell do they even control or know what they have? And here I think our Fed still has a pretty good finger on it, maybe likely to lose it if they keep pushing the direction they are. But I think by and large, they still have a pretty good control on things. How do the Chinese even have a clue where they're at? How do they know if they're on foot or horseback?
Well, I think the banking system is a system of privilege, and I think it's probably more pronounced in China than it is in the United States. And I think in the United States, I think the wealthy, the investor class, has gotten really benefited from the Fed's last 10 years of historic monetary policy. I call it historic monetary policy, not modern monetary theory. But I think over in China, I think it's even more skewed, which is why you have so many unofficial ways of lending money to people. And I think a lot of that, those unofficial off-books type of lending, is a result of, you know, decades of central planning control. My mother-in-law and father-in-law are from Haiti, and culturally, their banking system wasn't very robust. So a lot of people in Haiti, this is a cultural hangover from that, they're living in New York now, they have these pools that they rely on. So they pay into these pools, and then when they have an emergency, they pull money out of their pool. So I think this, a lot of the stuff in China is just a hangover from, you know, 30, 40 years of Maoism. And the current banking system, the official banking system, is really for the privileged few who are creating, you know, businesses and factories in accordance with the central committee's central plan.
Well, sort of like here where Microsoft can buy their stock back and get a loan at 2.5%.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I
exactly
can
like that.
You and I can maybe get a credit card at 15%.
Yeah. Well, my credit card, I've had it for quite a few years from Bank of America, and it's 6.9, so it's not too bad.
And one of these days, you will get a letter saying they're not doing that anymore. Trying because I did that at my U.S. bank.
It might be back up to 8 right now. I haven't checked it in a while.
But I got a letter from U.S. Bank. I was 7.5, and they just said, I didn't do anything wrong. I never missed a payment. And all of a sudden, well, by the way, we're now 13.9 as our minimum.
Oh, and man. Wow.
Well, no, they grandfathered me in on the little bit I had on there at 7%. But after the next payment, I was – no, they didn't raise the rate of anything I bought. But I didn't have anything on there. You know, I wasn't
–
so if I had $500 on there – They okay, we're keeping your 500 at 7%, but by the way, but go online right now, and even with a 850 credit score, I'm going to say the best you can get. Now, that doesn't mean that everything online, there isn't one somewhere that, you know, it doesn't pop up. I tried this last week, because I just did 2 weeks ago, because my point for the listeners was, this whole crap about trickle down, trickle up, in the 10 years that we've had essentially free interest rates to banks, the actual credit card rates have gone up. They've not gone down.
I better check mine.
They would have sent you a letter first, but maybe you never carry a balance, so they didn't bother with you. But I mean, try and get a new one at that rate. You won't.
No, there's no way. Yeah.
Yet the rates are zero. It should be easier to get one now than it was 10 years ago, and it's harder. The other question is, how do you, when it comes to infrastructure, and we had this sort of debate here this morning because of by the way, if you don't come to Chicago for another 4 years, you still won't find the spaghetti bowl here, the Burn Interchange done. It's a 10-year project, you know.
It's kind of like the big dig in Boston, right?
Yeah, or the Bay Bridge. How long did that take?
Or the high-speed train that nobody's going to use in 20 years that is going from, San Francisco to L.A. and San Diego?
I guess my question is, when you look at infrastructure and people continually talk about the GI Bill, at least I do, versus other stuff, well, to me, Hal, there was a time there where all these people came back from the war. They were people that, had fought, and they were a pretty, I'm going to say, reasonably organized class of people is how to do things, because we had just basically kicked ass all around the world. And education was very cheap. The schools were hurting. You put these guys in there, I'll bet the total cost for 4 years couldn't have been $1,000. It was probably 800 or something, even like at Notre Dame or someplace. So it was an investment for the time that was absolutely spectacular, because you moved people out of, it was probably the biggest middle class creator that ever. Not necessarily because of the idea, but because of the idea and the timing. And that's what I'm trying to, when you build in the 30s, you build the Golden Gate Bridge, you didn't just build a bridge. You opened Northern California to Southern California. The amount of traffic, the amount of commerce that you did with that is like nothing out of your, the same way with the, Hoover Dam. You created the Imperial Valley, where with some percentage of all the lettuce and stuff we eat, you couldn't grow there before, and all of a sudden it's one of the most fertile spot in the country, right? You were able to do these kinds of projects that made incredible sense, the TVA, those kinds of things. It's not the same as we didn't maintain a bridge, it fell down, let's rebuild the same bridge. That's stupidity. To me, it's not the same. But how do you, in the midst of all the political fighting we have, how do we say, okay, we want to spend some money on infrastructure, but it's not just going to be repairing crap we should have repaired before. We need to have, now for me, in an area, now I've been joining us from Chicago, I think, and being a rail guy, I think the commuter rail lines here should all be outfitted, now some of them you can't do it in the city, but to where the times are 20% faster, which essentially takes the ability of people to live and work in a hub like where Google's going to be or Amazon's going to be or somebody. It's now people 10 and 15 miles further out than ever before can now become part of that working community. And to me, that's worth a lot more than just letting a bridge fall down and putting the same bridge back up. I mean, there needs to be some method to this madness, and I don't necessarily see it, do you? I mean, just throwing money at, and that's what Obama, I think, totally screwed up. He decided he wanted to go for shovel-ready projects, which to me meant the projects that were sitting there because nobody really wanted to do them. We picked stuff off the shelf nobody even cared about and did.
When he went to Raleigh and participated in an economic summit there, this is when I was teaching it in Greensboro, he kind of joked that shovel-ready jobs weren't shovel-ready.
Well, yeah.
And it didn't get much press, but they're never shovel-ready jobs. And, I showed a video to my students this week in my macroeconomics classes. I have two of them this semester. They're a lot of fun. But the video showed Sweden's economic model, and they privatized all these government agencies like the trains. They privatized that stuff, and they still have a pretty substantial safety net in terms of retirement and paid family leave and whatnot. But if we were applying the Swedish model here, the Amtrak would be owned by a private company, run by a private company. MTA, I think it's MTA in New York. It's been a while since I rode the subway there. But it would be run by a private company. The the L trains in Chicago would be run by a private entity, and if they ran the public train system, you would probably have like Wi-Fi and comfortable and clean and people wanting to ride those things. Right now, people in New York have to ride the subway because the traffic is just so horrible, and because it's run by the government, the city, you know, it's not at all a pleasant experience at all. And I have students from Sweden who talk about how great their train system is. It's privatized. The prices are pretty good relative to like flying, and they're comfortable and they're clean. That's what I would say.
All right, I'm gonna push back at you from your seasoned dead maven, Milton Friedman.
Yeah.
It has to do with, again, as I'm on this shtick this week, it has to do with how you do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys at Pullman who were have the same ilk as you, they would say that, for instance, the bus, I'll just pick a small piece, the bus procurement and delivery system to be used per day for like the CTA, that particular garage that's responsible for spitting out 200 buses a day in working order, a nice working order, probably could be better off being privatized. But that every 5 or 6 years you need to go out for bid and do it properly so that the drivers show up and they just grab a bus. That the CTA would be out of the procurement business and maintenance business because they're not very good at it. Okay, and you could probably cut the costs way down. It's not the same as having some law firm in Chicago work some deal with the city. All you do is flip it over to a private firm, and in 2 years they're twice as much as it was costing you before, and you have the same crap. I mean, it has to be
a competitive process.
Well, I'm saying, so, but I mean,
you can't have city officials carving out sweetheart deals to your friends and whatnot. So it has to be a competitive process.
But I'm saying the same mentality, because I think a lot of, don't take this wrong, a lot of professors look at public versus private. But there's a massive gray area in the middle. If the public was smart enough to realize they weren't competitive and would like to go out and make it more competitive by having auctions off of different pieces of it, if they were that smart to begin with, they might actually be fairly competitive. Their idea is, how can I make money on the other side of this? If you're doing that, you're not getting anywhere. You're just going from an inefficient, I mean, nobody will tell me that the Skyway is any more efficient now than it was when the city ran it. It just costs more. After they sold it, there was no competitive bid there.
Well, it has to be competitive, and you know, all these public services were run by the government in Sweden back in the 70s. In the mid 1990s, they decided to set things free, and when they set things free, it created all kinds of innovation, entrepreneurship. The services increased in quality and prices. Things ran better. So I'm actually all in favor of the Swedish market model.
Well, I mean, part of it, and I don't want to say anything bad here about other people, because yeah. I'm not Swedish, I'm Irish and Italian. Yeah. How much of it, Carl, again, this is back to my timing is everything. How much of it is that Swedish people that I've met, they're not generally crooks like people here. And I'm not accusing you or me or Maddie, but I'm saying here, we're supposed to be at war. And yet stealing from the government is a national sport. Right? I mean you look at the Swedish model of medicine, and it's not the model you and I would have. It's a very socialistic type of thing. But they don't have everybody at every level stealing as much as they can, like they do here.
I think in the 1970s, I don't think you could say that. The government set up a system in Sweden where they had these worker funds, and firms had to put their profits in these worker funds so workers could use the company's funds to buy stock. So the company was financing its own takeover. So there was a lot. I mean, I think politics, when you bring politics into a business decision, I think you're going to bring in corruption. I think you're going to bring in those kinds of arrangements that just, you know, make you think of Chicago and, you know, the mob and whatnot. You know, when things become political, I think that's when the problem arises.
Well, you know, you lose your ability to try things. Maybe it's because we got too many swinging idiots sitting on the couch with a beer, texting in their opinions or something. Now, my thoughts on for instance, the train travel type of thing and what you could do to help some of these central cities, my thoughts have a lot to do with what some of the studies were at Pullman, that if you increase the speed, if you double the increase in the speed, that you exponentially, you go four times the amount of people. And that's the studies that they did. But I'm not going to take this study and proclaim it gospel like all the other idiots would. I'm going to say, let's put a little bit of money on the table. Chicago's got five train lines. Let's upgrade one of them. So instead of averaging 45 miles an hour with stops, it's going to average 60. Or 65.
Well, if you're only going to upgrade one of them, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of people vying for that line because they want to build new condos along that one that gets revamped.
Well, that would be a good thing. So my point is that let's try it and run one of them to see if, quote, I'm right.
Yeah.
If we spend all this dough and the train's 10 miles an hour faster or 15 miles an hour faster and it goes 5 miles further than it should, if we don't get the expected things like you're talking about, there should be a town at the end of the line now that grows. If all that stuff doesn't happen, then the chief's wrong. But instead of it being a $40 billion screw-up, it's a $2 billion screw-up.
Well, the problem with the public train system that I can see is that the government, when it runs the public train system or any enterprise, what it does is it pushes down along the demand curve, right? It lowers prices along down the demand curve. A firm pushes prices down along the supply curve because it wants to make a profit. And when government runs it, it gets pushed down along the demand curve, and what happens is the entity makes losses, and those losses need to be paid somehow. And at the federal level, the government can just print money and paper over losses, like at the post office
right. Or
at Amtrak. But at a city level, they got to roll bonds over on top of bonds to do that. So that's why I'm in favor of a private entity doing that. And a great example is Chief Timothy State Park out in Clarkston, Washington. One year it was ran by the government. The very next year it was run by a private firm. When it was ran by the government, they let the water turn on when it was raining. The next year, when it rained, they didn't allow the water to turn on because they care about cost. So I don't like being pushed down along the demand curve. I want to be pushed down along the supply curve.
I would say that I'm all for that, but I want to make sure we do it right. And the firm that now runs it gets a 10-year contract, and if they don't meet what they're supposed to be meeting, they can be booted out by somebody who's not being paid for them in their back pocket when they leave the office. Yeah. And in 10 years, the incentives
in the contract are probably not market-oriented, I suspect.
Yeah, well, that's my point.
Yeah.
And in 10 years, if they're not doing the job, or if somebody says, I can do that, just like the guy here who was...
In the private marketplace, a firm's contract is up every day, right?
Well,
a 10-year contract... Man, you can kind of slack off. You're not held accountable on a daily basis. But if in a private market competitive system, man, your contract with customers can be severed with that service at that moment, and that's why I prefer maybe shorter term contracts.
I would agree. But now, when you and I, one thing we push back and forth on, and by the way, I think I'm right on this one, Hal. You're right on a lot of stuff. Is your view of the economy right now? Is that most of it is still, quote, competitive. In my view...
Well, it depends on the industry. I mean, I think probably one-third of the economy might be... Two-thirds of the economy might be mostly free, but the rest of it's probably not, so...
I'm thinking that your side is shrinking by the moment.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And to the point where you can't point your finger at Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas and say... Well, that's competitive. No, it's not. And now, yesterday we just had another. What's the big hospital group that's taken over the other one as of yesterday? Somebody's taken over Swedish Covenant that had a bunch of hospitals, and we're well on our way to being two or three hospital groups here in the Chicago area.
Yeah, the Affordable Care Act was a piece of legislation that has resulted in monopolization, like most legislation is. Resulted in monopolization in health care and hospital services.
Drugs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I think we're... We may be a couple of years away to where the number is. Hell, I can only I can point to two industries, honestly. Yeah. Hell, I'm going to say I surely can't count stock trading and option trading anymore in there. I'm going to say agriculture, and I'm going to say saloons and restaurants. Name me a third that anybody could join without a whole hell of a lot of problems.
Well, I don't think agriculture is. I mean, maybe it is more so than
on the farm level.
In the 80s. Well, but there's still quite a bit of price controls, government purchasing products from farmers, and then the loans. I think the biggest problem with the farming industry is these loans are so subsidized. It's probably created a credit bubble there,
too. What I'm saying is, in this particular industry, you can be, in terms of perfectly competitive, you and I can go buy a farm, become a farmer, leave the industry. Whether we farm or we don't farm doesn't really affect the price. I mean, in your and my definition, economic definition, at that level, it's about one of the few perfectly competitive things we have.
Yeah. I think electronics, software, the internet, information.
Only in the beginning and less and less. Yeah. Only in the beginning and less and less. I mean, I don't know.
That's why I fight at the margin. I'm not a very good at revolution, but I fight at the margin. And as long as we're moving toward a freer society instead of control, that's why I oppose Trump's trade war with China. That's why we should be applauding what China does to the United States instead of having Trump go over there and threaten sanctions and tariffs and whatnot. But, you know, we just got to push back on it, and the best way to push back on it is just at the margin, I think, and hopefully we convince enough people that freedom is better than planning.
Well, we have a younger generation, Al, that thinks that technology trumps monopoly and oligopoly and cartels, and it doesn't. You and I know that.
I don't think they even understand really what socialism is. I mean, I think they like the idea of the slogans, the cliches about socialism. But if once they get into it, I think they're going to realize that it's not what they want.
But what percentage of the stuff you do know and I do is in monopoly industries? It's got to be getting hell. If you fly a lot, there's four airlines. There's never going to be a fifth. I mean, of any magnitude. In our lifetime, right?
Well, that's the government created monopoly too, right?
Yeah,
because of the FAA. And,
well, but if you don't have government
restrictions of access to terminals and safety and whatnot,
the internet, we're never going to find a way to get another Google. They're going to be so involved with the internet and everything else. They're going to be on it to the point where I don't think we're going to get another one. I don't know that we're going to get another Facebook. I don't know that.
Well, if you read George Gilder, he talks about the next internet going to be a kind of a blockchain technology, and Google may not foresee it, just like Rockefeller failed to see that gasoline was here to stay and wasn't a toy of the rich, right?
Well, I mean, but it still comes down to who controls the alley, who controls the way into your house, and who controls the towers.
Yeah,
and we had two satellites. Dish put up one, and the other guys, DirecTV, put up one. Maddie, give me a number. 25 years ago, we still got two satellites.
Well,
it's not like we're getting the shuttle back, so we can put up one more and open that one up for auction to compete against the other guys. That will be over like a fart in church if you mention that to Dish or DirecTV, right? That though we think we need a third and fourth satellite, that goes nowhere.
I mean, well, maybe the Chinese.
Well,
or,
maybe
the
they would.
Will put a satellite up
there,
right?
Can you imagine if they did, or if they put one over the U.S. and said, "Oh, by the way, bounce your stuff off us, and we'll charge you less than the other guys are paying on the dish and the other one." I mean,
the federal government probably claim that it's a laser that's going to kill people, and that they have the right to shoot it out of the sky or out of orbit, right?
What does it do to your view of that industry if all of a sudden, since AT&T bought DirecTV, so they've got one? Yeah. What if Comcast buys Dish? So the two land guys now own the space guy.
Well, yeah, but streaming's getting bigger. More people are cutting cords.
Yeah,
want choice.
Manny and I have this argument all the time. Who do you stream from? When you get your bill, instead of half of it being cable and half of it being internet feed, it'll be a third cable and two thirds internet feed. It's the same line. The same guy owns the line.
I think over the long run, it's going to be just menu driven, and these companies who right now have monopolies, They're gonna have to change and stream like Netflix or something.
Okay, but
or people are just gonna continue to leave them.
All right, what I'm saying is, no matter where you go, you're either getting it off the air and they control the air, or you're getting it from the alley and the same people own the alley. So you're saying I'm gonna do all my stuff on Netflix, okay, and I'm gonna get it off the quote internet versus TV. The line comes in from the alley. The same guy is selling you both. He's laughing at you.
Not yet.
Well, I'm
3 years ahead on him right now.
France, England, or China, or maybe Amazon puts a satellite up there, right? I think space is going to be a free market. I think people like Elon Musk and Amazon are going to be pushing for their own satellites up there and their own delivery systems. And maybe 6G is going to be even better, yep, and people won't have to go through
that would
those
be the
traditional channels.
That would be the beauty of it, Carl. But if it's 10 years away, the amount of money you're going to be made by the... I'm sorry. Because you and Carl argue with me the same way, so I confuse the two of you. By the way, both of you should be complimented to be confused with the other one. It's not because both pretty darn bright guys. But my point, I guess what I'm saying is, you're right. Somewhere, it's not for me to be so grumpy and say, yep, there's never going to be competition. But the things that I've studied in my life, I don't think you and I and Maddie need forever cartel. Give us a few years, then knock yourself out. I'll take the money I'm making over the 2 years, and we're going to own our own ski resort, and we're going to smoke the best cigars, and drink the, and then let everybody compete. All I want is a good head start. Give me 3 years where I got the only hula hoop, you know? I mean, it's all...
Well, that's what everybody wants. They want a head start from government. They want their little markets protected, and they rent seek to get those protections from the politicians.
I'm not asking for forever. A quick bill, a billion, where I know that I could house you guys at a nice ski resort. We'll do Tuscany in the winter for a little while. We'll always go to spring training. We'll have our ski resort, our spot there. I'm just asking for, you know, a few weeks here and there. I don't want everything. You know, 70% is good enough for me. I'm an easy capitalist. I don't want 100%.
But after a few years, that won't be enough either, because then... In a couple of years, you'll want to have more.
I didn't say we weren't going to start another business and get another 3 years that government gives us on the dole. I didn't say we'd stop once.
Let me just say this. I tell my students all the time. We live better than Queen Elizabeth I.
Yeah.
We have access to Metallica and Mozart. She didn't have access to any of that stuff. We have, you know, Game of Thrones. We have World of Warcraft. We have smartphones. She had none of that stuff. It took her a month to get to Paris.
I'll bet you.
So
we also
over
we have
the long run. Over the long run, markets seem to work, and when governments try to block markets with policies, black markets emerge. Black markets emerging, black markets are just the market forces trying to free themselves from the shackles of government. And that's why we're going to have a better future.
All I'm trying to say is that the guy who buys the generic drug company, we're pumping out penicillin at 5 hours a shot, and somehow we work the system, and we get 3 years of $250 a shot. I'm happy after the 2 years, 3 years. I know somewhere along the line it'll be, quote, fixed, but all I want is by 3 years. and the amount of money made in there is, I think, is unconscionable. But somebody will finally catch up to us, and then guess what? We'll sell it to some stupido for a big bunch of dough who thinks he can do it forever, and all of a sudden he gets caught. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm willing to do that. Give me my 3 years. I'll sell it, and I'm happy. How's that for being a sly son bitch? You know. Hey, I'll take care of yourself, buddy. Teach well. We'll have you on soon. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Okay.
Now we're down 17 points in these spoos. We are not looking back here this morning. This does not look good. Hey, Mr. John Neal after the break. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Just met Warren aboard. We also have Mr. John Neal. Employment numbers came out. February payroll is up 20,000 versus 175. So that's a bit of a miss. Yet the unemployment rate went back down to 3.8. So I hope everybody was paying attention. We went through those numbers earlier and how they didn't match the household survey. So if you look at last month's massive up surprise of 304,000 versus like 180. This month's massive downside, 20 versus 170. If you add the 180 to the 170 and you add the 304 to the 20, plus they revised another month higher before, you come out within 10,000 of the predicted number for the last 2 months. It just evens it all out. So even though we're down 18.75, 19 and a quarter now, I don't know why people didn't, you know, let's just say to the stocks and Jack's staff, it was somewhat predictable that something like that was going to happen, right, Matty? I mean, which isn't to say we had the number, But it is taking the market down a little bit. Now we're down 20 because we were down there anyway, because generally we're concerned about the export numbers in China down 20%, so it's sort of a bad morning in that regard. Over in Europe, and I'll get this here in a second, boy, all of these numbers, they're taking all these financial sites and they're squirreling them up here. Yeah, Manny, why don't you do a stretch for other sports while I'm fighting for my stuff here?
I can do that. 39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same could be said for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Traffic building steadily, but no accidents or significant issues. Southside expressways have actually looked good all morning. Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, looking good. Slightly better than normal, actually, and no accidents or issues to report. A couple of crashes in the area, though. Tri-State northbound right at I-88 at the exit ramp. There's a crash on the ramp from 294 to 88 westbound. So that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that. Just to the west of there, off the expressways, Route 83 at 31st Street, there's an accident. And just south of that, Route 83 at Ogden, there's a crash as well. So a couple of crashes right by each other on Route 83. Out in Carroll Stream, Lies Road at Gary Avenue, there is an accident. Out in Bartlett, Route 59 at Struckman Boulevard, there is a crash. And then one other significant issue, closed due to numerous accidents, Route 20 between Route 25 and Randall Road. The road is apparently completely iced over, and it's causing all kinds of accidents. So Route 20 is closed right now between Route 25, which is Liberty Street, and Randall Road. That's out in the Elgin area in the northwestern suburbs.
What did you do, Manny? Go out there with your hose and sprinkle it?
Apparently. Lots of ice and snow out there in the northwestern suburbs. Elgin, Bartlett, Wayne, in that area. So keep that in mind. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, overcast with some snow early. Not expecting much for accumulation, but some flurries. And then we'll go up to a high of 35. Could see a bit of sunshine this afternoon, but still well below normal temperature-wise. Right now it's cloudy and 28 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 35. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 66. Right now it's overcast and 61. In sports, the Blackhawks beat Buffalo in a shootout last night at the UC. 5-4 was the final. Blackhawks remain 9 points out of the final playoff spot, 15 games to play. Coyotes are 3 points out of the final playoff spot in the West, so they're one of the teams the Blackhawks would have to leapfrog. They shut out the Flames last night 2-0. College hoops, it was Illinois getting blown out down in Champaign to Indiana, 92-74.
All right, we're up, we're cooking with gas there, as they say.
DAX up 75, I'm sorry, down 75.6%, FTSE down 58.8, CAC round down 29.6. Again, we are now down 2075 in the S&P futures. The Nikkei down 4.32%, 21,025. Shanghai, and this was the big one we've been talking about all morning, down 4.4%, down 136 points. Under 3,000 again, 29.69. Still way up in the 2,500 or lower than it was earlier, late last year, but still it's a big move today to go with those trade numbers. Hang Seng down 5.51, that's 1.91%. We've got oil retreating $1.40 now. 2.5%, so that's a big move. Brent down 167, again, 2.5%. RBOB gas, even almost, down a nickel, wow. This is $1.75 now, so we're looking at the economy way weaker than people thought. I don't know why people thought for an instant that number last month was the right number when household data didn't support it at all, but obviously people did. Gold is now up 1080, 1296, threatening to go through 1300 again. Silver up 11.5 cents. Copper on the other way, however, because if China weakens, copper goes down. 288 down almost 3 cents, which is a pretty good move for copper. So I was almost going to ask you for traffic, weather, sports, Manny, but you already did it. Mr. John Neal, how are you, buddy?
Doing good, good, good. Good morning, guys.
Well, other than the fact that our gold is rocketing up for us, yoo-hoo, I'm not so sure the rest of this stuff is so good, John. We're getting our butt kicked. The only one I see pre-market in the Dow is DWDF is up 2 cents. Everybody else is getting pretty much down. Boeing's down $6. That's a big mover. We got Visa is down $1.73. We got stuff down everywhere. What do you make of this? Goldman Sachs down 2. It's kind of the stuff we've been sort of predicting, but not with any sort of a mind to trade in it. I mean, we've just been making sure we're protected and trading the movements. I'm going to be busy today rolling puts and stuff, but that's a good thing. What do you mean? We've had this horrendous week after this massive run-up. What are we doing? Just a little correction to the correction, or still in a bull phase, or we pushed China too far and now people are basically having a problem?
Oh, boy. Anybody's guess is exactly what's going on. But like you point out, though, Tom, this is kind of, we don't exactly know, the why or the timing of any of this. But this is, why we do the type of things we do and, protect the people and whatnot. But with that being said, I think this is somewhat, short-lived here in this move down. We're starting to get into some of these support levels, things like that. So I'll analyze that this morning a little bit and look harder at that. And been good for my precious metals positions. We had a little move back and had some calls that were a little bit too tight, so I've been able to, move those, and so it's been good for that, this temporary pullback.
Well, we got under 1,300, so I was wondering how much lower we're going to go, but I think we, whatever the support was there, it seems like it hung in there on the gold.
Right.
I think if everybody keeps throwing dollars at problems, I still think it's got only one way to go, and that's up. Having said
that's exactly it.
But I think the current world doesn't view gold as like you and I do. I mean, if you and I think it's going to go to 1,500, we better be happy with 1,375, because I don't think it's 85 anymore either, John. So I don't know that the millennials are going to run to gold. I don't see that. But I mean, it is somewhat of a storehouse. But I think this all sort of, I still can't figure out. What exactly happened Monday morning when we came in here and the market was off to the races and we were up 20-some points and the spooze, and all of a sudden I'm watching it at, 10 o'clock here or thereabouts, which would be 8 o'clock your time, and, it's drifting down, and I go, I can't believe this thing, and next week, well, last week was pretty darn positive, right, for the market, and I'm like, this thing could, go under here, which I was really surprised. Then it just went under, kept going, and we bounced back a little bit. But basically, if this holds today, we're down 5 days in a row, right?
That's the whole point.
I tell you what, you couldn't have got, I don't know what odds, after last week, you could have given me 10-1, and I wouldn't have taken us down 5 days in a row this week. Would you? I would never.
Not in the least. Totally unexpected, because we pretty much, the markets in the prior week pretty much ignored everything. That was quote unquote bad news, and just marched right through it. And this week, they're doing just the opposite. So.
Well, Well, I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question. What's different about the news this week? I mean, you and I and a lot of the other people that come on the show have sort of sensed the slowdown in, quote, the regular economy.
Right.
Nobody seems to know, even from guys like Hal and Carl and so forth, even if I use the names interchangeably, maybe, which I shouldn't. Nobody seems to know why all of a sudden people are being concerned about it a little more. Is it, are there studies that show it's worse than we thought it might be? Is it, but something, there's been some tone change this week, both in the headlines and the rhetoric. Maybe it's the fact that people can't put their finger on why it's happening is making people nervous. I for one think that we've done a little too much damage to, maybe not on purpose, I'm not going to accuse, you know, people of doing it on purpose, maybe somehow or another that the slowdown around the rest of the world, which some people here, crazily enough, seem to think is a good thing. Hey, look how much better we're doing than these other guys. Well, okay, but those other guys, to a certain extent, are our customers. I mean, so there's only so much, that you can drive your own customers under the bus and then say, I don't have any customers. I mean, we have to believe that we're interconnected maybe more than we want to be. We still get, 45%, 40%, I've looked at it lately, of our investments in U.S. Bonds and bills and so forth come from overseas, right? So, I mean, it's the idea that it's America first alone and always, I want America to be first too, and so do you and Manny, but you can't do it without the other people coming with you, maybe like you could have 40 years ago. So,
right.
I mean, if China's export business is down 20%, 40%, and all of a sudden they start reneging on loans, guess what? A lot of the loans they renege on are going to be our people. You know, so to think that it doesn't affect us, I think is some combination of naive and stupid. I mean, that's just me. I mean, I know it's a little harsh, but it may not be that at all. What are you seeing in your area? Manny, I'm not really seeing a whole lot here where things are slowing down that much. Are you? I mean, is the bus, the expressways are as crowded, the trains seem as crowded. I mean, are you sensing a pullback here? I don't, yet.
I mean, it depends. I mean, people are getting laid off left and right over the last 6 months.
Really? No, you're seeing that tonight?
Yeah, in white-collar jobs, absolutely. Now, in low-wage jobs, I think that there's a lot of demand for hourly jobs and blue-collar jobs, and that's great, and I'm very, very happy for that. But a lot of the white collar jobs in my business, from banking to financial to cybersecurity, there's been the last 6 months, as I've said on the show, I've noticed all kinds of layoffs and buying freezes, and I'm talking big layoffs. I'm talking hundreds of people being laid off, sales staffs.
Is it
compliance people?
Is it ignorant layoff? It's, we got 1,000 people. I'll bet we could go at 900, lay off 100 without even knowing what people are doing. Is it business slowed down kind of layoffs?
Well, I think part of it's business slowed down. I think part of it is there's so many acquisitions that, a company gets acquired and then they spend 6 months or 9 months sorting it out, and then they just cut a percentage of the workforce, and that happens. And now that acquisitions just happen every day now, maybe it's happening more. So, I don't know how much of that is 100% related to the economy, but, man, there's been a lot of layoffs in white collar businesses that I've seen personally over the last 6 months.
The acquisitions that I know, even though this is becoming your field, Manny, listening all the time, are the acquisitions. Let's put it this way: you and I and John go out and buy a restaurant because the restaurant's doing good and we like the business, which is one kind of acquisition. Or is it the restaurant next door buying it and closing one? Are these horizontal combinations, I'll use the economic terms, or are they just private capital, other people just wanting to enter the business because they think it's good business?
I would say both. I would say it's a combination of both. I don't know one more than the other.
Well, if it's horizontal, that's usually what happens when you're talking about. In other words, if another firm that did exactly what your firm did bought you guys, that's a horizontal acquisition. I'm saying you're probably more likely to lose a lot of throats.
It's less of that.
Okay.
It's more of the other, and they're just looking at a spreadsheet and laying off a percentage. That's what I'm seeing.
There's 1,000. If there's 1,000, if everybody just worked harder, we could do a 950, that
yes.
type of thing?
Yeah.
Well, to me, that's summarily ignorant, but it's a style a lot of people use, right? So if you're efficient, it kills you. If you're not efficient,
you're still not efficient. You just got 15 people less, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think anyone in a white collar job, or probably any job really, over the last 10 years, maybe longer. My team, for example, was a 20-person team, and now it's down to an 8-person team, and we have the exact same number of accounts, exact same number of tasks, and we're able to scrape by, but our level of service has absolutely been impacted.
So I mean,
how could it not?
If I was a client, would I notice a difference? I'm going to say the answer is yes.
That's what I just said. Yeah, our level of service has been impacted majorly. I think our clients are seeing it, and it makes us look bad, and the people at the top don't care, obviously. But as far as they're concerned, hey, we're still getting the job done with 8 folks that when it used to be 20, and it's like, yeah, we're getting the job done as in, you know, the wheels are still moving, but it's a noticeable decline in service level, and I think that, you know, may not impact you in the short term, but in the long term it absolutely will, and I think it's starting to in my industry.
Well, you know what,
and in probably, you know, most industries where they've completely just cut the workforce.
Well, I think
I got to tell you guys, I see a lot of that going on out here right now, to be perfectly honest with you. I've got some clients that are, you know, some executives at some of the larger chip companies out here. I'll just say it like that. And, you know, it's trying to get done more with less resources, and in this case, the resource. You know, being the person and the project teams being smaller and the departments being smaller and, you know, so on and so forth. And they'll keep doing that till something goes horribly wrong, I suppose.
Well, I think what ends up happening, again, Kevin probably is more our maven when it comes to this because that's what he teaches classes on. I think what ends up happening, Manny, I'm not saying your places or any of the other places we're talking about, I'm not going to accuse you, is the people who run the place have somehow sealed themselves off from reactions to the customer, by the customer. So somehow or another, they don't talk to customers either, even one or two, to where somebody will say, hey, Joe, every time I call now, nobody ever calls me back. What do you do, lay everybody off? I mean, they somehow are not getting that feedback. Somehow or another.
I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. Somehow or another, the people under them have learned either by decree or just because you stick your finger in the air and you see which way the winds are blowing. What did the one guy in Casablanca say? I put my finger in the air to see the political wind and now it's from Vichy, some Vichy. I mean, I think the people under these people learned to head that off at the pass to where they don't actually hear it. And you want people to do that. Where in our business, obviously in John's place, a branch PTI out there, or for me, if there's a complaint for PTI, guess what? I'm going to hear about it. Right? I mean, we're not big enough where I could say, well, here, I'll have my minions deflect that from me, and I think everything's fine, and all my cutting people is doing great, when in fact it isn't. I mean, if you're going to do that, I think as the right manager has to be have his ear absolutely, not his finger to the wind, and find out if he's screwing the place up. It seems like, you're right, man, they don't seem, either they don't care, or they don't want to listen, or whatever. Right? I mean, they don't. I mean, it doesn't appear they do anyway. Or maybe in their mind, since nobody left yet, it must still be okay. Even though, you know, we used to take a guy to a basketball game, I'm not saying you did this, a big customer to a basketball game 5 times a year. Now we take him twice. He's bitching about his other 3 times he didn't go to a basketball game, but guess what? He's still here. You know what? Where do we have to go? How many basketball games, how many dinners, how many drinks, or how many times do we have to see him at a seminar? How many times have we got to call them or email them to where they're looking for a spot that they can lower it as much as they can before the guy leaves, right? And which, in one hand, sort of makes sense from an economic standpoint, but it's also very dangerous because getting a client is real hard to do, as you all know, right? So,
oh yeah,
but I mean, clearly it's some part of theory, all right? How much? I mean, there's going to be. If you go into the Tripoli Tap, for instance, and you buy a glass of wine, not that I ever do that, and the wine starts out at, you know, it's a full pour, it's whatever, it's 8 ounces, it's more than anybody will ever give you at any other saloon in the world, and all of a sudden 1 week it's 7.5. Well, it's still a lot better just about every place. Then it's 7, then it's 6. almost intellectually, you want to know what's going to cause the chief or somebody else. What number do I have to get to? 5.75, 5.5, to where the glass is half full and it's very obvious before the chief never comes back. I mean, and you don't want to be so far over the line, but you're better off a little over the line than you are a little under, right?
Absolutely.
And I think people...
No question.
Go ahead, John. I've been talking too much.
Oh, I was going to say, I have another example. It's just what we're talking about. I was talking to somebody that came to visit me that was just laid off. They were a loss control officer, in other words, pilferage and theft and things like that for many years, and were just recently laid off. And the reason they were laid off is that the corporation has some sort of a metric of when you're allowed to have a loss control officer. So in other words, this person did such a good job that they fell outside of the metric. In other words, there's so much less theft and pilferage and things like that that fell outside that metric. He got laid off because he did a good job.
So let me get this straight. You have four robberies a day, so you put two new policemen in there, Maddie and Thomas in the squad car, and so now all of a sudden they catch all the bad guys, there's no robberies a day, and you can't them both.
Right, exactly. Right. I mean, is that the silliest thing you've ever heard?
Well, it almost is to our we should probably go start pilfering just to help your buddy out.
Right. I mean, it's like I couldn't believe what I was hearing. You know, I mean, he did such a good job, he put himself out of a job.
You obviously don't talk to very, very many high-end bureaucrats, because that makes perfect sense to me.
Right. I mean, it's not surprising, exactly, but... You know, I mean, just this backwards way of thinking that you're talking about, and then, you know, obviously somewhere down the line that's going to get worse, and, you know, I don't know, there's somebody for a similar position, but that's that jockeying you're talking about.
Oh, it's unbelievable. So, back to the market. We only got like a minute. We're down 21.50. Okay. Are we approaching, I think I would put people's money to work today. Probably have to pay up a little bit for the puts, but, last week, I thought we would never go down again. Now this week, are we never going to go up again? And next week, we go back the other way? Or what are we doing here, John? Are we starting to see some real problems to where even the dumbest among us think that, you know, China having problems, other things, is not good for us?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure one way or the other, but from our perspective, with us doing these protected programs, things like this, I think it's if I have some new money today, I think it's a good way to start in some of these indexes, like your Qs and things like that.
Well, to the upside, in a couple of spots I did yesterday, I did a couple of repair strategies, thinking it might actually bounce a little bit instead of just selling calls. I'm not as excited to sell calls down here. I will do a repair strategy. But should I roll my puts, or should I just leave them up there? I mean, if we're going to do this another week, I don't want to roll them. I'll roll them next week.
All right. Well, it's a tough one, you know. Because it's not making a lot of sense, a lot of these moves, you know.
Well, I mean, we're down 23 here, which is the lowest I've seen this morning. Is that 23 on its way to 40, or 23 backed unchanged? Therein lies the rub. I wish I knew.
Exactly.
You know, I wish I knew.
Right.
Of course, you got to be careful with that, because remember the Twilight Zone, where the guy want to know what happened tomorrow, and he opens up the paper and he sees his name in the obituary? You don't want to do that.
You don't want to know that much.
No, you don't want to know that much. Manny, thank you very much. SP Futures, like I said, down 23.25. John, thank you. Down 75 in the NASDAQ. It's looking ugly. I'll be back to tell you all about it on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.